This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Daily Digest with me, Sharmila Ganesan, and Tishao Eek. So before the break, we talked about Sweet Spot Malaysia, which is a hackathon that is going to happen in November. Mm-hmm. And they're going to try and figure out solutions for the rising rates of diabetes in Malaysia.
All right. And speaking of solutions for another problem,
more immediate one.
I know. We are asking you on Twitter, do you think suing the authorities involved in Selangor's water woes would bring about a sustainable solution to the constant water problems that the state is facing? You know, surprisingly, it's sort of even. 51.1% of you say yes. 49% of you say no. So do keep those votes coming in at BFM Radio, or you can also WhatsApp us your thoughts at 018-789-8899. We have a few comments that we will get to a little bit later.
Now, if you're one of the few lucky people who don't know why we're talking about water woes, I don't think anyone doesn't. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the flurry of messages from friends and family, warning of impending water cuts, that's an experience so many of us empathize with. And this is, of course, always followed swiftly by the frantic collecting of water into any receptacle that you have in the house.
Yes.
Because who knows how long the water cut will last this time, right? This has been the pattern for many residents of Selangor and Klang Valley of late, following repeated water cuts and water supply to millions of households and businesses alike. And the recent rise in these incidents, due to reasons such as chemical discharges into rivers that cause the pollution of raw water or burst pipes. Now, this has got everyone really quite angry and questioning the efficiency of many of these agencies involved in ensuring that we have safe and clean water.
Well, here's a rundown of the more recent cases of water disruptions, in case you have forgotten. On the 3rd of September, in what is now known as the Sungai Gong water pollution incident, about 5 million people in the Klang Valley and Selangor were without water for days, following oil pollution from a factory which forced the Sungai Selangor Phase 1, 2, 3 and Rantau Panjang water treatment plants to stop operations. Barely a month later, volunteers of a Gotong Royong program, again at Sungai Gong in Rawang, stumbled upon clinical waste at the riverbank, suspected to be from a private veterinary clinic nearby.
And then, on the 4th of October, the water treatment plants in Semenyih and Bukit Tampoy ceased operations, leaving 274 areas in Petaling, Hulu Langat, Kuala Langat and Sepang without water. And the cause for that was attributed to odour pollution. Mm-hmm. Last Saturday, AIS Selangor announced another water disruption affecting 686 areas following the discovery of a burst pipe that supplies treated water. Now, just as AIS Selangor was sorting out this case, they announced a new water disruption which affected twice as many areas. The Sungai Selangor Phase 1, Phase 2, Phase 3 and Rantau Panjang water treatment plants had to be shut following the discovery that their raw water sources were polluted. According to AIS Selangor, this caused water supply disruption to almost 1.2 million account holders.
And so many cases in such a short time. If you were any one of those 1.2 million people, I'm sure you were furious. And so many people directed their anger towards AIS Selangor and the Selangor State Government, while others pointed to the many other agencies involved. So an article in the Malay Mail quoted AIS Selangor Chief Executive Officer Suhaimi Kamarul Zaman as saying that AIS Selangor's responsibility was only as a water supply operator and to monitor the water intake site so as to ensure that clean, raw water supply is channeled to consumers. He said that the enforcement regarding the pollution of raw water supply is undertaken by the Selangor Water Management Board, which is also known as LUAS, and several related agencies.
Yes, but an expert in environmental law, Derek Fernandez, he was quoted in an article in Free Malaysia Today, and he said that the National Water Services Commission, or SPAN, which is actually a federal body, is the primary authority for the protection of water supply. Now, according to him, the Water Services Industry Act of 2006 gave SPAN executive authority to manage and protect public water supply, and that includes substantial police-like powers to investigate and even enter premises for checks. Now, Derek Fernandez also said that the Environmental Quality Act 1974 is a federal legislation that places the power to prevent and control pollution, including that of water, in the hands of the federal government.
So, lots of finger-pointing, but no clear solution in sight. So, citizens have started wondering if they can take matters in into their own hands and sue the relevant authorities for cases involving river pollution to ensure that this doesn't become a regular problem. The MP for Wang San Maju, Datin Paduka, Dr. Tan Yi Kiu, even launched a campaign to institute a citizen class action lawsuit against several parties, namely the factories that polluted the river, the Department of Environment, Suruhanjaya Perkhidmatan Air Negara, SPAN, Lembaga Urus Air Selangor, LUAS, and Perbadanan Urus Air Selangor, PUAS or Shabas. Mm. She was quoted in an article in Free Malaysia Today saying, and I quote, "We are now making the first move to show the agencies that not only polluters should be held responsible, but the authorities also need to play a part in protecting the rivers." But, you know, how feasible are legal moves like this? Can we actually sue the authorities for water cuts like these ones that we've been experiencing so far?
So we wanted to turn to the experts for this one.
Yeah,
so
we can talk about this.
So joining us on the line now are Emeritus Professor Dato' Dr. Shad Salim Faruqi, a professor of law at the University of Malaya, and Kew Jia Yao, the co-deputy chair of the Bar Council's Environment and Climate Change Committee. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show. Thanks for joining us today. So correct me if I'm wrong, but existing laws on river pollution include the Environmental Quality Act 1974, Water Services Industry Act 2006, Local Government Act 1976, and laws in the Penal Code and state legislation such as the Selangor Waters Management Authority Enactment of 1999. Is it another case of enough laws, not enough enforcement?
Yes, it is. But I think in addition to that, what is lacking is a broader perspective on what needs to be done to prevent these kind of irresponsible behavior. And then we are talking about a broader gamut of steps and approaches.
Yes, I would agree with that. First of all, the legal framework is needed. But in addition to that, what is needed is willingness on the part of the authorities to enforce the law. Because as the saying goes, justice is not in legislation. Justice is in administration. The other factor is this, that laws, institutions, procedures are as good as the people who administer them. So quite often in our societies, many societies, not just Malaysia, we tend to emphasize the structural part of law reform, the structural part of the legal system. We invite experts from here, there. We spend a lot of money improving structures and procedures. But then we don't really give the proper normative training. I'm not talking simply of technical training, the normative training to our people to imbue them with the spirit of the law, with the purpose behind the law, with the consequences behind the law. We don't imbue them with that. And therefore, things don't really work well. I'm not saying that the legal framework is satisfactory. Jia has correctly pointed out there are lots of issues. Federal-state relations, that's a big issue. Because environment is not easily divisible. You can say river running through the state is a state matter. But you see, drainage and the fish in the river, the plankton in the river, all that actually is all connected. I think in the case of Bakun Dam, Gopal Sriram Justice clearly pointed out that environment is a holistic issue. So the federal-state relation is a problem. And then you pointed out there is a local government act. Yes, but our local government is not elected. As such, how the local authorities act, basically they act as they like. They're not answerable to anyone. They don't have to seek our vote, our consent, our pleasure, not at all. So I think there are lots of problems. But nevertheless, the positive point is that there is growing awareness. The fact that you are holding a radio show on this is growing awareness that environmentalism is a very important aspect of the human rights movement in this country and around the world.
That's right, Prof. As you said, there is a lot more awareness now and customers are furious, rightly so, about the water cuts which have disrupted their daily lives and businesses alike. And the fact that it's not a one-off incident just makes it all the more infuriating, right? So do we have the rights afforded to us as consumers in situations like this which involve disruptions and cuts to our water supply? And if so, what are they?
So I would say, yes, we do have rights as consumers, but back to the earlier theme, is we are not only consumers, We are a lot more. We are citizens and human beings first.
Wonderful.
And yes. Then we also wear very many different hats as consumers of water. Of course, all human beings and many other creatures rely on water. But we also have other hats. We may be employees working in businesses that have responsibility and have influence on the quality of our water sources, our air, our environment. We may be investors who have financial interests in these businesses. We may be regulators. We may be enforcement officers. We may be judicial officers. So we are many things. At the same time, we are also consumers. And so it is not simply, it's not a narrow right alone. That right obviously has been violated and infringed upon, but there are many other rights that have been infringed upon. And so a multiple angle in the discussion. I think Prof. Shah talked about developing that normative approach. I think to borrow from the pandemic, what is the new norm that we are finding ourselves in? So like in Selangor, this is not a one-off incident. In fact, this is too many incidents within the span of just 1 month. What does that show? It is a systemic problem that we have. It is not isolated cases of maleficent businesses out to affect our water. It is a systemic problem that requires a very broad approach in changing behavior and holding people responsible.
I think what Jia said is very profound, that we are not just consumers, we are citizens, we are actually inheritors of the earth from the point of view, for example, of religion, not just one religion, many religions, all religions, we are trustees of what actually has been bestowed upon us by the Almighty. And may I add a further dimension? I'm a parent. As a reasonable parent, I'm worried about what my children and children's children will inherit. So my interest in the river is not simply of a drinker of the water. My interest also is, what's the kind of earth we are now bequeathing to our children? The rights of future generations. This is an area that needs to be developed. Human rights do not belong only to you and me. I think they belong to our future generations.
Definitely, Prof. And like you, I'm a parent. I also wonder what world I'm leaving my child with. But the question many have been asking is this. Can we sue Iceland or Luas Span and the government for this? Is that something that's possible?
Yeah, well, the part about suing, I don't want to talk too much. The Bar Council will accuse me of usurping powers. Hey, GI is here. I'm just joking. Surely, if there is locus standi, one has suffered in some way, one would have a right to go to the courts. But I don't want to concentrate on that, though I know that in England, yeah, they used to have this remedy whereby I could apply to the Attorney General for a relator action, whereby since the Attorney General, as the guardian of the public interest, at least theoretically, as the guardian of the public interest, he's supposed to ensure that the EQA is followed. Suppose he's not doing his job, I could request him to join me in a relator action. The sad part, even in England, is that the relator action is discretionary. The AG may or may not give his consent. I would rather emphasize that as citizens, we have other remedies besides legal, judicial. We have political remedies. I think we should approach our MP. Ask the MP to ask a question in Parliament. We should write to our MP. Some MPs, and may God bless them, they operate service centers. Let's go to a service center and file a complaint. Let's contact our NGOs, and there are plenty of them, and many of them are very, very dedicated. Let's write a letter to the newspaper. Of course, there's no guarantee that the newspaper will print the letter or will print it faithfully. I'm sorry to say that. I'm doing it in a lighthearted way. Sometimes the journalists listen to one half, then they print the other half. The reproduction is not fair. It's not fair sometimes. They are selective. But nevertheless, I think we should use whatever remedies. By itself, each remedy is inadequate by itself, whether it is judicial remedy or a letter to the editor. But put together, I think they can constitute a torrent of pressure, which would bring some results.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think, you know, when we ask, can we sue them? Can we sue these authorities? The question is actually one of who shall we hold accountable, right? Who is the cause of our misery? And that is a question we should ask. And we should get better at asking this question. We should sharpen these questions so that we ask them more accurately, more relevantly, more efficiently, so that we can hold the specific parts, so that we can diagnose the problem more accurately, and then direct our attention, our energy for reform in those areas, rather than to say it's the government's fault, for example, and having a low resolution discussion of what the problem is. So on our part, all of us, we can get better at thinking about where accountability should lie and what people can do. So how broad can this be? Well, take, for example, Bank Negara and the Securities Commission's initiatives recently towards exploring how much due diligence should banks carry out when they provide loans to businesses, right? To see if those proposed expansion plans, the ways those funds will be used in ways that will have less impact on the environment. That's an example. Yeah.
There is actually a Government Proceedings Act which allows us to sue the government. But to sue the government, we need to find the real wrongdoer, the tortfeasor, and we have to identify that. Otherwise, the government will wash its hands of the matter. So I think there is the possibility in a court of law, but it's so expensive, so very expensive actually to go to a court. It's dilatory, it takes a long time. There's a process of appeal. And very, very sadly, an ordinary citizen sues the government, the entire might of the Pajabat Pagam Nagara comes on the side of the wrongdoer. And, you know, the Attorney General's office actually is the largest law firm in the country. I'm told they have about 1,800 lawyers inside. And they will all now find some argument, legal or procedural, to defend. So it's a big job, but nevertheless, the legal possibilities are there. In administrative law, there is, as I'm sure you're aware, the order of mandamus, a command to a public authority to do its public duty. So one can actually, if there is, as Jia was pointing out, if there is improper due diligence or no due diligence, I think we can go to the court. But I would not emphasize legal remedies. I don't mean any insult to the lawyers, but I would not emphasize in these matters. I think much more important is public pressure, public opinion, the weight, the moral weight of public opinion, I think, and of course, the political weight of public opinion.
So I just want to touch on one last thing concerning this idea of a legal remedy. Datin Paduka, Dr. Tan Yu Kew, the MP for Wang Samaju, recently launched a campaign to institute a citizen class action lawsuit against the authorities. And that's actually caught the attention of many people. I'm just wondering what this would look like in reality and how feasible it actually is to pursue.
Well, this is known by many different names. If I understand it correctly, in India, they call it public interest litigation. In the USA, they say social interest litigation. Basically, what it means is this, that if the impoverished, the marginalized, the weak, the illiterate, or those, for whatever reason, unable to go to the court to afford the cost, and then someone on their behalf who has just a toehold of interest, just sufficient interest in the matter, he can apply to the court and say, please give us a hearing on the matter. So I think that will be a wonderful development. But of course, the danger of citizen class action or public interest litigation would be that there will be lots of what could be called busybodies who will be constantly going to the court. And the courts will have to create a filter to filter out. But I think that's entirely manageable. In India, this problem has been addressed. The court has a committee. They look at the applications which are fit for judicial determination. But I think this is ultimately the issue of locus standi. Do you have a standing to come to the court? So I'm just giving an example. If, let us say, women are being sexually harassed in the prison, can the Bar Council's Human Rights Committee apply to the court on behalf of these women. I would think that is absolutely necessary. Justice is everyone's concern. And it would be, in my view, most incredible for a just and humane legal system to say that unless the victim complains, there is no remedy, or the court should not wake up. Not at all. I think if a lady has been raped, even if she doesn't complain, I think it's the duty of society to take action against the rapist.
Yes. So I think from the broader perspective, not just on the merits of this proposed public interest litigation that the MP is taking, I think the very fact that there is intention for to hold those responsible accountable, I think that's very good. And I think that helps us bring the conversations that we are having here onto a platform. Like Prof has said, the courts are not the only platform to have these conversations. And in fact, the legal action is a rather limited platform for these conversations, because there are rules of procedure and there are rules that would kind of dilute and narrow down the conversation. But it's important that it's being brought up. But we should not only see that as the only remedy that we have, as the only toolkit that we have, because there are many other avenues and platforms to have these conversations, whether it's in the business boardrooms, whether it's during AGMs of businesses, whether it's in the newspapers, whether it's in social media, whether it's in our coffee shops, right? These conversations about what matter should be mainstreamed.
And speaking of those conversations, Bar Chats Enviro Rights is a 5-episode webinar series on environmental rights. Tell us about the series and what will be discussed at the next webinar that's happening on the 25th that will actually involve the both of you.
Yes, we're very happy to be actually doing this project. It's hosted by the Bar Council Environment and Climate Change Committee, but really backed by a big group of non-lawyers, just ordinary concerned Malaysians who want to improve these conversations for the lay Malaysian, to promote curiosity and have healthy discussions about our rights and getting involved and encouraging public participation in how the environment should be managed and also upholding environmental justice. So we are now in the second episode of the 5 webinar series. That's happening on 25th. And we will be talking about where do environmental rights come from and what are they? And so we're very lucky to have Prof. Sharp and Preeta Shankar as two of our panelists to have a discussion about what these environmental rights are, where do they come from as the component pieces for us as we develop the whole series. There are 3 more episodes coming up next. So I hope anyone at all who has an interest or who want to improve his or her ability to have these conversations to join us in these free webinar sessions that we're having by registering at the Facebook page of the Bar Council Environment and Climate Change Committee. The Facebook handle is at BCECCC. Yeah.
And well, before we let both of you go, is there any last message you'd like to leave us with?
Well, no, I just wanted to say this, that human rights are on the march. And I think it's being increasingly realized that issues of environmentalism, the issues of citizens' basic needs, socioeconomic rights, not just free speech, but also water, jobs, hospitals, vaccines, roads, potholes on the road. These are all issues where citizens need to assert themselves. Issues of sustainability, the plight of the poor. And I'm sure we'll all agree, in most of these environmental issues, the first persons who are adversely affected are the poor. Those who rely on the river for their protein, rely on the river for the water, and actually their lives are often devastated just because an industry upstream had polluted the river. So I think this is something that we all need to be concerned about, in the sense that this is an issue not only about the survival of ordinary human beings, but actually survival of the planet itself.
I would say, yes, it is high time we no longer look at environment as just one chapter, as one aspect, but it is intertwined. It is intertwined in how we do business, in how we think about business. It's intertwined in all aspects of our life. So I think it is a time when we should really normalize and we should really be looking at these issues as core in our decision making and not just something to think about on the fringes.
Thank you so much for speaking to us today. That was Emeritus Professor Dato Dr. Shad Salim Faruqi, a professor of law at the University of Malaya, and Q Jiayao, the co-deputy chair of the Bar Council's Environment and Climate Change Committee. So we were asking you, do you think suing the authorities involved in Selangor's water woes would bring about a sustainable solution to the constant water problems faced in the state? Quite evenly distributed. 50.5% of you say yes, 49.5% of you say no. A few comments. Melisaya says suing them will make them realize that they can't take the consumers for granted and the losses inflicted on the consumers must be compensated. Andy says, given the irresponsible tidak apa attitude of would-be polluters who surreptitiously dispose waste into the waterways, no governments would be able to totally prevent incidents of such pollution. The government must look into improving waste disposal system, making it readily accessible. Ajit says, suing should be considered as the last resort because right now water is already polluted. Customers are already affected. The industry and the ministry must work together in providing ways to protect water resources. Perhaps a suggestion here by Ajit is to invent a type of technology to process the waste for each type of industry. Woke Karen replied that tweet by Ajit to say that suing is to prevent similar incidents from happening in the future. Stillwater, oh, that's a very apt handle there. Stillwater says that, we have to deal with corruption in our system, in our culture, in our society first. Otherwise, how can enforcement of the protection of our natural resources be carried out? And Apala is saying that, we have to make sure we don't have self-serving leaders in order to be effective in addressing this problem.
That's right. So that's all the time we have for that today. But if you are keen to find out more about environmental laws and your rights as a citizen, because yes, keeping up pressure is part of the solution. Do join their webinar on Sunday. And again, for more information, just head over to facebook.com/BCECCC. And if you'd like to share your thoughts with us on this idea of a lawsuit, to prevent further water woes, you can also tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or look us up on Facebook to drop us a message at BFM The Bigger Picture. And if you've missed any part of today's show, you can get the podcasts at bfm.my/dailydigest on the BFM app or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on Front Row, I will be speaking to curator Jaffar Ismail of Fergana Art about their latest exhibition called Bujukan Semilir. So stay tuned for that after the 3 p.m. news. But first, here's Carol with Bad Water, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.